And with the familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It's Sunday, August 10th. I come to you coast to coast from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches of Styx, every single day on WrestlingObserver.com, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, over-the-air affiliates, AM and FM kids, if you don't know, ask your parents what that means. iHeart, TuneIn, other various apps, everywhere you can get a signal in this fine world, you can hear my voice, and I thank you for doing that on this Sunday. Of course, a special shout-out, as we always do, those listening at the American Forces Network around the world. We thank you for your service each and every day. And this is a special edition of the show. It's been 2 weeks since I've been on the air. A little vacation, scheduling snafus, you know, those type of things, as you know, during the summer. But today's episode it's historic. Going back to the future in a way. I don't know if that phrase makes sense as context. There was once a time in the show that Brian Alvarez did 2 hours on Sunday afternoons, Sunday evenings. 2 full hours of live wrestling talk. And friends, today, that day returns. This show is not going to be just one. It's going to be 2 hours. That's right. Not every week. But today, I got the approval from Sports Byline. 2 hour show today. We're going to talk about the week in WWE, the week that I think they became cancel proof, truly a TKO company. I'm going to chat about that. The WWE ESPN deal, we have winners and losers out of that, some aspects and things that haven't been talked about this week. A lot of things that I think, we'll explain that expression in a little bit. Got a lot of AEW to talk about. We had Collision last night. And we also have Forbidden Door coming up in just a short amount of time. How you feeling about this card? I don't know. But we had a ton to talk about. 2 hour show. Are you ready? I'm ready. All that and more awaits you. Let's stick around for the next 2 hours on Wrestling Observer Live. We're going to be right back after these messages. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. Again, Sunday, August 10th. Glad to be back. Apologize for the last 2 weeks of not being here if you listen to the show live or if you're listening on WrestlingObserver.com. I was gone in Vermont for a week. So here's the past couple weeks. So and we'll get to the wrestling talk. There's plenty. Again, if you're just joining us on the air, 2 hour show this week, 2 hours, all good, all new content and all that good stuff to get you ready for your week. So my wife is a teacher. So we try to pack in a lot during the summertime, have a young daughter. And August, after an early portion of the summer, which nothing really seemed to happen. And a lot of that because my father-in-law had open-heart surgery. He's doing much better. But that was obviously through a monkey wrench right in the beginning of the summer. And so we have a lot of stuff packed in. And we had one of my best friends has an annual pool party. It's kind of a get-together for a lot of college friends. We had that. The very next day, we went to Vermont for a week. Shout out to Green Mountain Wrestling up there. Did not see any of the action and all that, but they're a great budding, growing indie promotion out of Vermont, of all places. So we were in Vermont for a week in the Stowe area, Lake Elmore. We go up there about once a year. Came back for a week, and then we came back. And then Sunday afternoon, we took our daughter to her very first Boston Red Sox game. It was 11:30 a.m. start. We were out the door at 8:15. She had no idea until that morning. That was a parenting highlight, I will say. And we have a little bit of time, and we're going right back on vacation again. Went to a theme park, a Canobie Lake here in New Hampshire on, last Friday. We're heading to Jellystone. Just back-to-back things. I cannot wait till this Thursday when I'm completely free. But that's a reason. A long story. It's a reason I've not been around for the last 2 weeks. However, I do have some news. Andrew Zarian will be returning here the first weekend of September, so I believe September 6th or whatever that first Sunday is of September, he'll be back, but I'm going to be with you the rest of the way through the month. Don't know if it's ever going to be, every week's going to be 2 hours, but we'll see what we do. Let's get in the wrestling talk. I've babbled enough, but we got a lot of time today. This is the week, friends, at WWE, to me, truly became cancel-proof. They truly became TKO. TKO truly became them. Joining their brethren in the UFC, also owned by TKO. I'm not going to, you know, there's been a lot of talk since Brock Lesnar returned last Sunday at SummerSlam. I'm not going to rehash every single take. Not going to go through that. You know all the things. What I'm going to talk about is between that, the Paul Heyman reaction to that, which we'll get to and actually play here in just a second, the Hulk Hogan celebrations, and also we have WWE hitting the ESPN. We're going to talk a little about that. But really, with the Brock return and just kind of the reaction to that, to me, they truly became cancel-proof in that there's no true backlash that they care about. Nick Khan, president, has talked about before how the company does not pay attention to social media and those, I can't remember the phrase, but like megaphones or something like that. You know, basically that they don't really pay attention to that. However, they do when it comes to the positive stuff, and that's why they lean so heavily into influencers and so on. Reaction videos and the like, which are my least favorite thing. One of my least favorite things on the internet. Reaction videos, people filming themselves in any sport or any form of entertainment to then show people, this is how I reacted. They're all fake. They're all fake. It's the same thing you go to concerts and people are filming the concerts through their phones. Watch the damn show. I don't understand that. Again, I'm 47, so I'm a different generation than some of the younger folk, I guess. But enjoy the show and don't make it about you. Just enjoy it, enjoy, enjoy. But yeah, so many of them are so fake anyway. Anyway, WWE, they're going to keep doing the thing. They wanted to bring Brock back. I thought it was funny when Triple H said that the post-event, I almost said press conference, but it wasn't. You know, post-conference pep rally, I guess you could call it. Fitting. People have talked about that. I won't rehash all that, but that era was done. They used to do these pre-NXT PLE calls with Shawn Michaels, which were a lot of fun. Those just quietly went away through time, and it was only a matter of time before this happened. They don't want to or feel like they need to answer to anyone. And that's a good indication. And they wanted to bring Brock back, and Triple H reaction saying, you know, basically the same way that John Cena wanted to bring him back. And I think a day or so after, John Cena was kind of like, what do you say? Whatever they deal the cards, I'll play them or something along those lines. Essentially, like, he had talked and I don't know if he was directly asked, did you want him back? But it didn't make it sound like he did. So there's some conflicts there. If they wanted to bring him back, they're paying him a lot of money. And I think I saw a report from Fightful that they had considered him an active roster member for several weeks. And so they decided to bring him back. And what better time than to go against John Cena, one of the guys that essentially he came in with, OVW days and so on and so forth. So he is back. And there's been, to this point, no sponsor pullouts, no nothing. Everyone's happy in WWE. Everyone's happy in the WWE universe. TKO leadership is happy. They had a financial call we'll chat about a little bit later in this episode. But in terms of like things that I think, they're cancel proof. They do not care. And this reaction from Paul Heyman says it all. Let's get to this real quick.
Brock Lesnar, how long has that been in the works for?
That happened real quick.
Really?
Yeah, that happened.
Like, what's real quick? Week, 2 weeks?
A couple weeks.
Okay.
I mean, at least to my knowledge, I got tagged into it after the deal was done.
Okay. And when you say deal, like, did he need a deal to come back? What do you mean by deal?
He wasn't coming back on speculation.
No,
he is Brock Lesnar.
No. What I mean by that is, like, did he have to sign a new contract, or was he still? Because we hadn't seen him for 2 years.
Oh, but, I'm sure there's a new deal involved.
Okay. And obviously this has been met with some criticism, right? There's still this ongoing...
Everything in life is met with criticism. I don't pay attention to that.
Is the criticism fair?
Nah, I don't I don't pay attention to it. He's here. See, that's a reality of the fact. He's here. And if you were in MetLife Stadium on Sunday, you would understand that return meant a lot to that audience. That audience was jacked to see Brock Lesnar come out and to see him F5 John Cena. Nobody left MetLife Stadium going, oh, God, they brought back Brock. People were just going nuts. That's our paying audience. They're happy to see him. I'm happy to be part of a team that presents him. Everyone has criticism in life. There are people that criticize Jesus. There are people that criticize Moses. There are people that criticize Muhammad. There are people that criticize God or gods. There is no president that has ever existed with 100% approval rating. Or there is no president that's ever existed that someone hasn't pointed to and say, that president sucked. There are people who to this day think Abraham Lincoln sucked. They're wrong, but they think it. There are people who thought FDR sucked. They're wrong, but they think it. Bill Clinton doesn't have 100% approval rating. Donald Trump doesn't have 100% approval rating. Nobody does. There's always going to be critics of anything that we do. And very few people ever make it to the top in life without either making mistakes or having skeletons in their closet. Obviously, the decision was made. It's time to bring back Brock Lesnar. Whatever that decision is based on, I respect it. If they're critics of it, get over it. He's here. And he's going to be here. And you ain't going to be able to cancel him. And I'm happy to have him back. Because the audience is happy to have him back. If we brought him back and the audience rebelled against it, I wouldn't be happy to have him back. I'd be like, oh man, this doesn't work. But it works. So I'm happy about it.
And of course, that comes courtesy of Errol Helwani's show. I'm right up against a break. When we come back, we'll chat about that reaction, talk about the WWE ESPN deal. We have plenty of AEW left to come and all kinds of more stuff. 2-hour show, Wrestling Observer Live. Come right back just after this. All right, back with Wrestling Observer Live for a Sunday. My name is Josh Nason. Let's get back to that clip we just listened to, which is Paul Heyman on the Errol Helwani show talking about the critics of Brock Lesnar. There are critics, get over it. He's going to be here and you ain't going to be able to cancel him. So it's hard to understand or really kind of comprehend with Paul Heyman what's the truth and what's not. He likes to have quotes. He likes to say stuff. He talked about, you know, Travis Scott, the way he says stuff. Everything just seems to be part of an act. And I'm sure there's some truth in there and so on, but there's also a lot of truth to that. He is emboldened. He's part of the I don't know if he's officially part of the corporate team, but essentially he's part of the upper management team. So he's going to defend Brock and he's going to do his thing. He's been friends with Brock for decades. And look, there's the issue comes down to this Janelle Grant lawsuit. And WB Legal, apparently, according to Dave Meltzer, you know, cleared him, what, 4 weeks ago? So, I mean, they certainly didn't cut him. It's been 2 years since he's been on a show. And they decided to bring him back. He looks like $1 million. And the fans, the most important thing and the reason the WB became cancel proof is the fans don't care. And the media doesn't really care. The media that they care about. The people booing? No. People are losing their minds. Did the mainstream media catch on this? Did ESPN give two craps? Nope. They certainly did not. We know about that. Not that they would anyway. Now, media like our outlets and other ones, Post and Fightful and all the other ones out there that I'm forgetting, they're ones to bring up the case, you know? They're ones to talk about how, and it's a fair thing to talk about. Should they have brought him back? Why did they bring him back? Did they need to bring him back? They didn't need to. They certainly did not. But this is the icing on the cake and putting, when in doubt, how do we get headlines? How do we put things over the top? And they certainly did. And they know they're protected. There's no way that they care. And the only way they're going to care, and it's been brought up elsewhere, and we know this because it's what happened when everything went down with Vince initially and Slim Jim pulling out. And then Vince was gone and Slim Jim came back in. Slim Jim's still around. The people are still snapping into it a week after this. They would have had their chance. So, I don't know. It fits with, for someone like myself who's covered the UFC for so long, since 2005, less as the years have gone on, but still know what's happening. This is TKO. Dana White. Dana White slapped his wife. She slapped him back, but he slapped her a couple years ago in New Year's Eve. And they're on vacation. Caught on video. He said, other than public shame, did he have any penance for that? Any type of a punishment? No. You think he said the shame or the fact that people see him now as that they did that, that's punishment enough. And I can see that mentality, But also, he's too big to fail when it comes to UFC. They have put him in a position where they think they need him more than anyone. Is that correct? 2025? I think if you went on MMA Twitter, you might see a lot of dissent in that. But a lot of grumbling about UFC. I'll say that. And they didn't fire him. I'm sure they didn't even think of it. I'm sure it was considered to be a storm that they were going to weather. And they certainly did. And look what happened. Nothing. Company is more successful than ever. Record gates. Pay-per-views aren't great from all intents and purposes, what you hear. They're not great. I think it's going to be a big part of this new media deal they're signing is they're going to have some protections there where they maybe, to me, if they had the option to go to pay-per-view, I think they can do that, but I think they want to leave it in their own hands just because of just how they do things now. But the bigger issue is that they're cancel-proof as well. Bud Light came right over. They needed them after the whole issues that they had with their stock going down and that whole situation. And they decided to get more bro-y, Shane Gillis and UFC and all these type of things to kind of gain that audience back, that perception back, really. And WWE is doing the same thing, even though they keep saying family friendly, and they're leaning into that. But yeah, they became cancel proof, and it really has really stuck out this week. And I mentioned the Hogan thing earlier. Look, you had to recognize Hulk Hogan and his passing. And we've not talked about that in the last 2 weeks. Of course, just a bummer I was able to miss that dialogue. But there's a lot of people that are, I'd say, happy he died, but they're shedding no tears based on all of his comments of the past and so on. I completely understand that. I came up in the era of Hulkamania. I was born in 1978, and I was onboarded through WWF Superstars of Wrestling every Saturday, and Hogan was a big part of that. I didn't shed any tears when he died. It was one of those like, wow, I can't believe this actually happened. But I understand that they had to do some sort of recognition for it. AEW did a recognition for it, and a brief one. I thought they handled it well after radio silence for days and days and days. But I think that WWE, they handled as best they could. I wonder how many people on the stage actually wanted to be there. And there's all that. But the bigger point is, they are not scared about public backlash unless sponsors start pulling out. They didn't care what Wrestling Twitter was saying about Hulk Hogan. They don't care what Wrestling Twitter is saying about Brock Lesnar. They do not care. If you're part of this complaining, they do not care about you. They don't. They don't care about media outlets like ours. We haven't had an interview with a WWE talent, I think, in years and years and years. I don't know if we're officially on the ban list, but I've heard it enough where it doesn't sound like we're able to get any interviews with them. Now, if we're at a media event or something like that, that's one thing. If we were to apply for credentials to the extent those exist anymore, I don't know about that. I think Brian has been denied access at times. Brian Alvarez, one of the co-founders of the site. So yeah, they don't care about us, and they don't need to at this point because their fans protect them. And that's all it is. You get big enough, and the same thing with Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar and everyone else. And everyone else now, you have to protect. If you get a big enough fan base where they can cocoon you and help insulate you from controversy and criticism from the outside, you are set for life unless you do something really, really bad. Bill Cosby still has fans. Bill Cosby went out tour, I think, as recently as this year. Bill Cosby. What are we doing, right? Doesn't matter. If you got a fan base and insulation, you're good. And that's what WWE and TKO proved this week. And we'll see how that progresses. Let's also talk a little bit about something else that was huge this week, the WWE ESPN deal. We'll talk about some winners and losers. We also have some AEW talk to come and some more things I think. Chris Jericho, John Cena, and the like, all types of other kind of notes and so on. So this ESPN deal, I woke up and I, as pretty much everyone does, you pick up your phone. What did I miss in the 7 hours I was sleeping? Because you got to know. And the first thing I noticed on the X timeline is WWE is entering this deal with ESPN. And I'm like, all right, I'm on it. Got up, brush your teeth, said hello to the family, and grabbed the laptop, which I do not like to do first thing in the morning, just like kind of ease in. But I'm like, all right, we got to get something on the website about this, and we did. And so many different aspects to this this whole thing. So obviously, if you're listening to this, you know the details. You know, if for some reason you don't, you're driving around a car somewhere in the American Forces Network, and you don't haven't had time to kind of get all the various details and so on and so forth. We'll kind of give you the TLDR, really kind of the winners and losers, and really, you know, the winner to me, the first one is ESPN. So ESPN has a streaming service that they are launching coming up just in a couple weeks' time, and they're going to charge $30 a month for it. And they need to have people essentially understand and come to grips with, like, why do I need this service? Now, if they're this new term, cord never. So the young folks out there, probably some of you listening right now that have never had traditional cable package, you're a cord never. They're trying to get you. The cord cutters, we know who those are, people like myself and so on that may just be going streaming services. They want me back. The other people that have cable right now, you know, so some are going to be able to get this from the jump. Some are not going to be able to get this from the jump. We'll see what happens. Eventually, everyone, the idea is that everyone has a cable package or a package that includes ESPN in their subscription is going to be able to access to this. You and I both know this is not going to last forever. It never does. Peacock, it didn't. Other services, it doesn't. It's an entry level. It's a drug. Get people in there. Get people used to it. And at some point, you start ramping up that meter a little bit, and you're like, oh, you're going to have to pay for this. And people are like, oh, I don't want to have to, but I really need this because I get all these things like WWE and the PLEs. And the best thing, and I've said this for years, if you listen to my Josh Nation's Punch Out podcast, I've said this before, the best thing streaming services can do is find fan bases that are used to paying for services. MMA, pro wrestling, boxing. Those are the ones. People have been used to paying for pay-per-views for decades, like myself. So paying a little bit less, oh, I'm paying less. That's great. Get those audiences. And that's what Peacock did. And that's what ESPN is doing with this. They're a big winner out of this. Now, is everyone going to move over in droves? Nick Khan says their audience travels. That may be true. That may not be true. I'm sure it is true to an extent. But it's a big travel. It's a bigger travel cost than I think most fans may have expected. $30 a month. Is it a huge budget breaker? A budget breaker? For some, it is. It's a decent chunk of change. We're going to talk about more about the WWE ESPN deal. Winners and losers. Who is a loser? I think you might have a certain idea. We'll talk about that. John Cena, Chris Jericho, and some AEW as well. 2-hour edition of Wrestling Observer Live rolls on just after this. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason back. Special 2-hour edition of the show on this Sunday, August 10th. We're talking about the week that WWE became cancel-proof, and now we're talking about the WWE ESPN deal. I have AEW stuff coming up in the second hour, maybe a little bit in this first hour, and some other things that I think I know, and a long sentence like that. And Andrew Zarian coming back in just a couple weeks. You can look forward to that as well. Let's get back to WWE ESPN. Winners and losers. I was talking about ESPN being the biggest winner, I think, out of this. And really the co-biggest winner in a lot of ways, and really the only way you can think about this, is WWE. WWE getting a massive rights increase. And the the funny thing, I guess it's funny, is the fact that for nearly five years, the people that cover this and are interested in it, myself, have thought that they had WWE had a $1 billion plus deal with Peacock. That was what was announced almost 5 years ago. For the PLEs, for the library, and now we learn for a lot of archive content we mentioned, but also 5 total original documentaries, and then also 250 hours, I think, per year of original content. That's the expectation. I don't know if that's, I assume that's per year. So it was what it was phrased on the conference call this week. And however, to make this deal look better and a bigger increase, They finally clarified, no, actually, Peacock paid us $900 million, not $1 billion. And granted, that first deal was done before TKO bought and merged with UFC, but still, they had 5 years to clarify that, and they never did, except for this past week when they needed to. I thought that was really kind of shady and strange. Anyway, so WWE, a huge winner. Why are they a big winner? They got a big rights increase. They are now aligned with, as maligned as ESPN used to be, when we went through the whole, I guess we still are, woke versus anti-woke, and I can't remember why people are complaining about ESPN, but, you know, they just perceived them. They were trying to be more diverse and so on, and I don't know. It's just one of those BS arguments you hear everywhere. But they were essentially like, okay, people are down in ESPN now to the extent people, I guess, are back in or whatever. I don't know. I can't keep track. What I do know is ESPN still matters. It's mattered to UFC, and it's going to matter to WWE. And how they've done that is they're going to do live remotes from SportsCenter on SportsCenter. They're going to be live these places. They're going to make it seem like a big deal. And no matter what, you go to bars or you go to restaurants and they have a bar area and so on. ESPN is on TV. It's not like they're playing Lifetime and USA Network. ESPN is everywhere. So just tangentially, you're just going to have people seeing WWE a lot more over the course of this deal. And that's good for WWE. I think they're going to cover them more in that not just going to be the PLEs. It's going to be some sort of other type of coverage in between. More news will be broken there. They're really going to lean in. This is a true media partner. Netflix is different in that way where they don't have, people don't have Netflix on their bar TVs all the time. And the SportsCenter does. It's live and so on. So the awareness is going to grow. And that, I think, is a huge part of this deal. Another huge part of this deal is the fact that some of these PLEs, select ones, are going to be simulcasted on one of the ESPN platforms, which I assume, I don't think it'll be ESPN proper, but ESPN2 is a possibility. It could be ESPN proper. But the key thing here is that it's not going to be the whole thing. It's going to be the one or 2 hours, as Mark Shapiro put it on the TKO call. It's a lead-in. It's a tease. And know who else does that? UFC does that. Boy, he was so accurate when he said years ago when this merger happened, almost 2 years ago, I believe, that we're going to follow the UFC playbook with sponsorship and all these type of things. They're doing this exact same thing with this stuff. They're going to treat the first hour like the prelims at UFC. Put some good stuff on. I bet you're going to see potentially bigger matches earlier in a pay-per-view now or a PLE now because they're going to treat it just like that. You got to give me something good where I'm like, I got to see the rest of the show. So that's a big component as well. So you have that. You have the accessibility. And again, ESPN needs them in order to drive subscribers and to drive more and more people to the service and provide that value add. Now, you know, I know in listening to Wrestling Observer Radio, Dave Meltzer had mentioned, they need, 900 some odd thousand to make this deal work for them. I've known Dave for more than 15 years. We text, new stuff about the website and all these type of things. I don't agree with him on everything. And I don't agree with him on that. And I think he sometimes missed the mark on the Netflix thing as well, which I've talked about. But I think in this case, it's not a, your value is you need content for the service that people are paying for to have a perceived value. Streaming services are all about value. What am I getting for my money? And so if they're like, I get this, which is NFL Red Zone and some other NFL network programming, I get access to all the ESPN stuff and I get the WWE stuff and whatever's to come, that's value. Now, that value might not be realized immediately. It may take a while. But someone says, my kid loves WWE. Yeah, I watch it for this, he watched it for this. It's a value. It's the same thing with Disney. People that have Disney or HBO Max or so on, it's like, how often do I? And it's that feeling right when you log in. When I logged into Apple TV for the first time in weeks the other day. And I'm like, I'm like, what am I using on this service? I'm like, I'm really not paying anything for it. So I'm just going to keep it. HBO Max. I logged in that last night. I think I log in and watch different stuff in there 2-3 times a week. Netflix, it's seasonal, but it's the same thing. It's that feeling. So if people are logging ESPN, they're like, I'm using this all the time, then it's a value. I don't think they need 900,000 people to justify the cost. I think they need WWE to put on a great product. I think they need, they being ESPN, they need them to do things that keep their fan base and that ancillary people are going to then come on to the service. There's a big kind of another winner of this, which is VPN services. And VPN services like NordVPN and that's the first one I'm thinking of because it's all over the place. There's a ton of these different VPN services. Virtual Private Network, the TLDR, if for some reason you're not technically savvy, it's a way to make it so it looks like your internet access is from a different country. That way you can access what different countries get. Why does that matter? Netflix. If I can sign into a VPN and I pretend I'm from England or another country, UK gets where the international, all the PLEs are available internationally, I don't have to pay anything. If I have a Netflix subscription, I'm good. Same thing with Triller and AW pay-per-views. I did this for the first time. I'm the person that is in my family. I have the title of the world championship of being the guy asked about how do we set this up? My in-laws, my parents, and so on. How do we do this? And sometimes I'm like, let's do this and this and this, or I'll come over and do it. And then there's other times when I'm like, I don't have to know. I'm going to have to be there in person, like my mom with a Facebook setting, and these tend to work. You don't want people to get scammed. Anyway, that's an aside. But VPNs are huge. And I had never done this VPN thing before when it comes to buying a pay-per-view a different country. And I did it last month with All In. I bought for $25 on Triller. I had a NordVPN. I re-upped my deal and I set it up and I had it on my phone and I started the pay-per-view, was able to buy it very easily. And then I sent it right to my TV. Done and done. No problems for, how long is that pay-per-view? 18 hours. No issues at all. People that figure out the VPN game are going to be able to save a lot of money. I think VPNs, they're very inexpensive. I think mine was like $100 for 5 years total. That's nothing. And it saves you money. And that, so VPNs are a big winner there. If you don't know how to set up a VPN, ask your technologically advanced family members or send me a note, drop me a message, Josh Nason on Twitter or on Blue Sky, JOSHNASON, or email Josh at F4W online. Not a full technical expert for everyone, but I tell you, it was super easy for me. And if it's super easy for me, it's easy for a lot of people. The big losers is really one. Who do you think it's going to be? The fans. This is a talk radio thing to say, right? The fans are the biggest losers. At some point, they will be. Because they're going to have to pay for this. People are not going to try the VPN thing because they don't know. And again, not... You and I listening to this right now, we know how to do all this stuff, but there's a lot of people that don't. And it's that friction point of, I have to go to another service. And you see this talk a lot with other sports. There was I mentioned the Red Sox game that I went to, and I was, my in-laws were hoping to watch, just in case we were on TV, but just in whatever. And so it was a weekend in which the Red Sox played on a Friday night on Apple TV, Saturday on their home of NESN, which is the regional sports service, and then on Sunday on the Roku channel. And I was texting my mother-in-law in line saying, I think it's on Roku today. And I'm thinking about, like, in the time it's going to take me to get a hot dog and a beer and go back to my seat, how am I going to explain how she's going to find Roku? I'm like, I don't know if she has her smart TV set up. I don't know how she can find it. And that's the thing that happens with a lot of fans. NFL is going to start getting this a little bit more. But again, they don't care because they're getting the money up front. So with this deal, you have WB on Netflix. You have WB on NBC Universal with USA and SmackDown on Fridays. with NXT, sorry, and then so you have the PLEs. So right now it's Peacock. Eventually you will have them on ESPN. And then with NXT, you know, we didn't talk about this as part of this deal. This deal does not include any of the archive footage, as we actually, I did mention earlier. So if they do that, it's going to be somewhere else. I assume YouTube, but it could be somewhere. You then have the, you know, original programming. Some of that will be coming to ESPN, as far as what I read about that. And then you also have NXT, which is on the CW network. But their PLEs, at this point, do not have a home starting in March. Do I think it's a big deal that they care about? Not right now. But it will be at some point. That's going to be because CW doesn't have a traditional outlet like that. They could, I guess, do app only. But I can't imagine why to do that. Maybe CW, the PLEs become CW special events and they run those on weekends. Who knows? That'd be a fun kind of experiment, right? But say those go to a different place. Now you're trying to just chase around and find all these things. Now, is the way of the world in terms of what we're doing with all these different services and all these things. But it doesn't mean that people are going to be any less frustrated. Look at the confusion this week with whether ESPN subscribers on cable outlets are going to be able to get this new service free. There's still questions about that. There's some cable outlets that they will be able to get us on Jump just by doing an authentication, you know, signing up the password and so on. But a lot of others won't. There's the ESPN people. I heard sports broadcasters confused at what they were going to do. How about your average fan? And eventually the fans are going to have to be paying a lot more for this as well. So fans, I think, will be losers in a sense. But again, they're insulated. They're in line with ESPN. We're big. We're good. They don't dare talk out against WWE and how this could be bad. There are some, but not all. Back in a few moments, we'll wrap this first hour up of Wrestling Observer Live. More AEW talk coming up in just a few minutes. All right, final segment, the first hour of Wrestling Observer Live. That's right, first hour, one more hour coming up. You're listening to this on Sports Byline Broadcast Network. We'll be up, be back in just a few minutes' time. If you're listening to this on WrestlingObserver.com, you don't have to wait at all and so on. Thank you for subscribing there if you are. Thanks to all the over-the-air affiliates and so on. Next hour, we're going to talk a lot about AEW. We're going to talk about the Collision show from last night. We're going to be talking about the look ahead to Forbidden Door, the early card, which is kind of meh. I don't know. And I think I know the reason why. Some more things that I think I know, I think. I really didn't really delve into it too much in this first hour. And maybe we'll do a little more today and next week. And so I got a Chris Jericho take. I got to get off. So I'm going to do that in just a minute. I do want to give a shout out to my friends at Limitless Wrestling. Indie promotion runs out of Maine. Last night, being Saturday, they ran the Colossae in Lewiston, Maine, which is the home of where Muhammad Ali, the infamous, famous picture of him over Sonny Liston. It was called the Phantom Punch for a lot of times. If you're into sports and boxing, you've seen this picture at some point in your life. And so they ran that venue for the second time, and I believe they damn near sold the place out. I think it was they announced just over 1,700. That's I'm sure my guy Randy is not lying there at all. He's not that type of person. And they had the Hardys in there main eventing. So for the very first time, the Hardys taking on Swipe Right of WBID fame. They had a lot of their TNA wrestlers. They had Moose, Tommy Dreamer. I think the whole system was there. And they had a good car. Yeah, 1,700 people. Lewiston's not like a huge city, but the Hardys, man, they are as much as you might want to think. They're a big draw, and they certainly were drawn in an area like that. So shout out to Limitless Wrestling putting in a big house last night. And you and I are going to keep building our house. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk about AEW, John Cena, Chris Jericho, and all types of other things. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Jason coming right back in just a few minutes. Stick around, hour two, going to be great, coming up after this. And once again, with the familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another hour, yes, another hour of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It's still Sunday, August 10th. Hour two is a ride. I come to you, and we come to you, coast to coast, from the North Pole to the South Pole, and from the beaches to the sticks, every single day here on WrestlingObserver.com, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, all of our over-the-air affiliates, AM and FM, iHeart, TuneIn, everywhere you get a signal in this fine world, you're hearing my voice. And I give you a big thanks for that. Of course, shout out as always to those on the American Forces Network giving you an extra hour today. We thank you for your service each and every day. Yes, the first 2-hour Wrestling Observer Live, I think in years, and years. And here we are. And I was glad to do it. A lot to talk about. I was gone for 2 weeks. I had a lot to get off my chest and a lot more to talk about in the weeks ahead. A lot more to talk about in the hour ahead. We have not talked about AEW at all, my friends. I'm going to correct that in this next hour. We're going to talk about AEW Collision from last night. A little bit of a preview, but we know at least one more match for Forbidden Door. Didn't really build much to Wednesday. And I don't know. I'm not feeling this Forbidden Door card. And I'm not trying to be contrarian. The pay-per-views always deliver. Every single time. But I think they're forced out of the news cycle a little bit this week. And this card, there's something about this card's not working. And I think I know what it is. And I'm going to lead off with that after the break. We'll talk about John Cena. Kind of some things I think. This heel turn was a disaster from the start, and we should have known it. We absolutely should have known it. It's a black eye for WWE. And we'll get to more about that with some more audio from Paul Heyman with that. Talk about R-Truth. Again, Chris Jericho. All types of other stuff as well. Another packed hour ahead. If you missed the first hour, you can always get that in the archives at WrestlingObserver.com. However, with more to talk about with AEW, maybe a little bit more WWE, and all types of other news, hour two is coming right up on Wrestling Observer Live. Stick around. Josh Nason, you and I are going to be right back after this. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason back for hour two. And it's time to talk about some AEW. I know. Y'all been waiting for it. Here we go. Let's get into this. Of course, last night we had AEW Collision live, coming back live to Roanoke, Virginia, the home state of Hangman Page. And there was, as always, these shows are good in terms of wrestling. In ring, no issues. But Collision has definitely, it is the, even though it did have the AEW World Champion on this, it still feels just like not necessary to watch. I think part of that is, I think they had, you know, three matches announced ahead of time for this. Tony Khan said recently that they do, the way they do match announcements is to get more social engagement and interaction and so on. I mean, I think if on a show that is a lot of mid-carders and people that are not at the top level yet, I think that to say that you're doing this for social interaction, why are people going to be excited about mid-carder matches, right? And there's also the other aspect where you have to, you're trying to sell tickets. And people want to know, they're not WWE. And they're just not. They're, that trust factor is not there to the point that you can just say AEW is coming to town, you're going to automatically sell out. We've seen the issues they've had in the past. They have to go to much smaller buildings, and that's okay. But you have to do your best to make sure every single one of those seats is sold in those smaller buildings and quickly, because that's how you get the sold out mentality. And that's how you kind of really kind of grow to get to that next level again that they were when they first started out. Announcing a match between, you know, I don't even know if they announced this Ricochet and Juice Robinson match on social. They do that ahead of time? I have no idea. But to do that, you have to, it's not going to, by holding it back, you're not doing anyone any favors, right? So last night's show was, again, entertaining on the wrestling, but in terms of like coming out of it, was it a must-watch show? Not really. You know, you had an entertaining match between Kyle Fletcher and Tomohiro Ishii for the TNT title, but they had Ishii challenge because he is because of Forbidden Door coming up. We'll get to that challenge in just a minute. But yeah, entertaining match there. You had a couple backstage segments. You had Megan Bain versus Emily Rose, so a squash match there. They don't seem to really kind of know at this point what to do with Bain other than just kind of keep her on the treadmill and keep her going. Juice Robinson versus Ricochet, which I mentioned before. I assume this is leading to maybe some trios action and probably the return of Jay White, perhaps, and so on and so forth. You also had, again, some backstage segments. You had FTR in a trio squash match to kind of build up the Stokely quote-unquote match against Adam Copeland coming up this Wednesday. You had a Hedgesera versus AR Fox match. This set up a challenge for next week at a women's trios match. And then you had the sixth man, which was Hangman Page and Jet Speed against LFI. So yeah, entertaining match and a party match, so to speak. Again, you knew the Hangman was going to be his home state, and these are the shows that he should be doing and so on. However, It didn't really build anything coming up this Wednesday, which is we have Hangman Adam Page and MJF having a face-to-face. We have Adam Copeland taking on Stokely Hathaway. So we know it's going to be some sort of a wackiness there. And then former AEW World Champion John Moxley against Kevin Knight. That should be entertaining as well. I assume this, Darby has been stalking John Moxley ever since he's returned. These little bits, I assume Forbidden Door, and that's going to lead into my Forbidden Door thoughts in just a minute. And for Collision, we have one match set up, and so this is for Forbidden Door. Zack Sabre Jr. is going to be defending the IWGP World title on that show against the winner of Hechicero, Nigel McGuinness, Lee Moriarty, and Danny Garcia. They're tagging this as a technical spectacle. So that should be entertained, but that's all we have for next Saturday, and then, or actually this Thursday, at least in Cincinnati, and then this Wednesday in Cincinnati for AEW Dynamite. Forbidden Door, it's not doing it. Not feeling it. Just not, I don't know. And I think I was driving around today and was actually thinking about this, as I sometimes do with wrestling, which means I watch way too much of it, care to way too much. I think part of this is because the gimmick is kind of past its expiration date. The idea behind the Forbidden Door, remember this whole expression? The idea is things that you never knew would happen. These matches you never knew could happen. How many of these matches do we have left that don't involve someone in, say, WWE and AEW crossing over, right? I feel like we've seen so much now of cross promotion in every company that there's not many dream matches that are truly left that, you know, that realistically could happen. Now, granted, if Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks were to go to WWE, that's one thing. If AJ Styles was to come to AEW, that's another thing. But you know what I mean, right? I think it's one of the things that's kind of hurt with this open contract era where people compete against each other so many, all these other promotions. Like, why do I care if I've already seen this already? If I saw this match in a New Japan show, why am I going to care about seeing an AEW show? Now, some people may not watch both. I don't particularly watch a ton of New Japan, but I know what's happened. It's kind of that build of like, we've never seen this before. And I think that's kind of the importance of it. And with Forbidden Door, we just had one of these shows in January in New Japan, the day after Wrestle Kingdom, Wrestle Dynasty. And that came 6 months after the last Forbidden Door. And that, of course, in between, I mean, there's been no shortage of New Japan talent that's appeared in AEW shows and even some Ring of Honor shows. And you have the CML component, but as far as today, and I think there's still, David mentioned this the other day, a lot of the top CMLL wrestlers, like, I almost said Mysterio, Mystico, and Máscara Dorada, and some of the other ones are already booked for another show in Mexico. So unless they get pulled, they're not going to have an inclusion on this show. And I should also mention, on this Sunday, we're, 2 weeks out from Forbidden Door. We don't have a lot. And one of the other reasons for that is because the G1 is going on. And New Japan is very, they stick to their traditions in terms of they don't want to forecast results and so on. So I understand it. They don't want to reveal some of these matches because AEW doesn't, because that term is still going on. Some of the results are probably going to be tied to that. Which makes me think, and I have thought for a while, they need to change the date for Forbidden Door. Tony Khan has shown a willingness to break tradition. He has shown a willingness to now not necessarily have the same event in the same location year after year, except for Full Gear at the Prudential Center in quote-unquote beautiful Newark, New Jersey, and All Out in Chicago. But I'm sorry. All Out is not in Chicago this year. So another way to break tradition. How about that? So I corrected myself in one sentence. So he's shown this ability and an increased desire to change things up. I think you have to do something with Forbidden Door. And I think you also have to address the whole January Wrestle Dynasty thing. If this has become a regular thing, that hurts Forbidden Door. Forbidden Door is hurt now because you can't have New Japan talent on the show with a long enough time to have fans actually give a crap about the match. which you need to have some sort of there, that hook, because is a byproduct of not having some of these dream matches. You have a couple, and we had the Bryan Danielson, Zack Sabre Jr. match, Will Ospreay, I think, and Zack Sabre Jr. as well, or the Ospreay Omega match. I'm just conflating things, but you understand what I mean. There's some of those where it's like, wow, wow, wow. But now you don't have that as much, and I think the timing has a lot to do with that. We'll talk more about that. Some more Forbidden Door thoughts. We'll go over the card after the break. We'll also talk about some other things I know that I think. John Cena, Chris Jericho, and AEW being forced out of the news cycle. Tons more to come in this second hour of Wrestling Observer Live. Josh Nason with you. Come right back after this. Back with you in Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. Sunday, August 10th, second hour. We are rolling. Now let's keep rolling with a look at Forbidden Door coming up on Sunday, August 24th. I do not know what we're going to do for that day for a show, because we're opening up the fourth wall here. We have the show starting in the afternoon, and when this show airs and so on, we also have Brian and Vinny doing a live show after Wrestling Observer Radio. I'm not sure what we're going to do for Sunday the 24th, so stay tuned for that. But we got plenty of stuff to talk about today and next week as well. So the card as it stands right now on this Sunday evening: AEW Unified Champion Kazuchika Okada defending against Swerve Strickland. Not a Forbidden Door match. And I think Forbidden Door really is changing into an AEW show with a few New Japan wrestlers on it. And we'll get to that. But, you know, Okada obviously was in New Japan forever, but he's an AEW guy. I have no complaints about this. These two should hopefully tear it up. Interested at the result. I assume Okada is going to keep the title here, because I think they want to. They've been building up, you know, the greatest tournament competitor ever in wrestling. Got the Continental Classic coming up in less than, what, 5 months, give or take. And I think maybe that's when he has his fall, because he got his fall at some point. It could happen here. I just don't think it will. And Swerve, I love Swerve. He's great. He is just top guy stuff. And he's going to get his run at the top. I think this is a. I don't think he's going to win this one here. We have the Hurt Syndicate defending against either FTR or Brodito. So we'll start learning more about that this next week. They haven't announced the match date. I assume it's going to be a week from this Wednesday. The Go Home Dynamite. I assume that's where that's going to take place. There'll be a little bit more heat there. So the Hurt Syndicate, either, what a week for those guys, an MVP, huh? Defending against either Brodito, which is Brody King and Bandido, or FTR. I could see Adam Copeland screwing over those guys in FTR in that match and kind of start leading to heat for what we assume is going to happen all out in Toronto. And Hurt Syndicate against Brodito would be kind of fun. Hurt Syndicate, what a week for those guys, huh? Jeez, the last thing you want to do with the AEW hardcore fans is get that perception that you're not on board. We've seen this enough, right? Seen this enough times that people are like, I'm not going to do this, or these. I used to be in WWE and so on. Boy, you don't want that stink on you. I wonder, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But either true or not, which there was not an immediate denial by MVP's camp or anyone. They had the funny video with Mike Bailey that they did. But there was certainly no one from either side immediately saying that story wasn't true. So I am my radar is up on that one. I think these guys have been a lot of fun. But if they've been a lot of fun because they're not willing to lose to certain teams or what have you, then that's not great. Hiroshi Tanahashi making his final appearance in London, England, as a active wrestler. He'll be on the show against TBA, so we'll find out about that. That could honestly be Kyle Fletcher. Kyle Fletcher is the on Saturday's Collision, said he was going to meet his challenger. It was kind of clunky as it is, because they did an interview. He did an in-ring promo after his match, and then Don Callis did a backstage promo that was filmed clearly on Wednesday. And the language of what they used, of how this is being set up, didn't exactly add up, and which is always a danger when you do those things. And so Kyle Fletcher wants to meet his challenger, which I assume is going to be Hiroshi Tanahashi. And that's my prediction, and we'll see how that happens. I believe it's going to happen on Dynamite. I think that was what was clarified, but I'm not completely sure. Again, a little confusion there. We also have AEW Women's World Champion Toni Storm defending against Athena. Not a Forbidden Door match, but it is certainly a great pay-per-view match. And then we have Mercedes Moné defending against Alex Windsor. Not a marquee match. All respect to Alex Windsor. Has not been, you know, she's been in AEW just for, as far as a contractor wrestler, for what, better part of a month, month and a half maybe. She's getting the shot. She's going to be in front of her countrymen and countrywomen. So that will be obviously a big moment for her in terms of, you know, does Tony Khan see her as like a future star or so on? Is this something they really want to kind of elevate her up? Sure, they could. They could. I think they want to try to make a moment or tease a moment, but I don't see her being Mercedes Moné at all. And again, we have this Zack Sabre Jr. match we're going to get, so we'll find out the challenger for that next week. I assume that one feels pretty ripe for, I don't think it's going to be Hechicero. I don't think it, I think it's going to be Nigel McGuinness on that. That would make a lot of sense. Again, not Forbidden Door type thing. And again, we don't really know how many matches are going to be on this, but there's not that, not in the true sense of the term, Forbidden Door. It's just not there. And you get a couple weeks to really kind of prime the pump for this. We have the finals coming up for the G1 this Sunday. And then after that, I assume Kenosuke Takeshita will be on the show in some form or fashion. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'm going to assume Gabe Kidd was probably scheduled for the show as well, but he's going to be out for some time, it appears. Eddie Kingston said he was bummed out. He's not going to be on this show. So yeah, a lot to come from Forbidden Door, but as far as we're sitting here in the Sunday, friends, not feeling it, not feeling it, unfortunately. Let me get you another AEW topic that's been kind of on my mind. Chris Jericho. Where's he been? Been at home, on the road to Fozzy. I don't know if they're touring right now. He's been sharing some pictures, doing his podcast, all that as well. But is he coming back? I'm going to give my answer. Some things I think I know I think. I don't think he's coming back. And I think that for a few reasons. One, the primary one. So for those that don't know, I guess I should preamble this, if I can use that term. I guess that makes sense, right? Been talking for almost 2 hours. Forgive me. His contract is up at the end of the year, which he had talked about before, like when he first signed his extension to be essentially a player coach type thing, or whatever the term was, producer. He had said, it runs for X amount of years and expires in this state. Now, he knows that people don't, when they talk about their contracts, they really don't like to talk about when they end. They like to leave that vague, which I've never really understood why. But he wanted that known for a reason. And I think he wanted that known for a reason because there's always other bidders. And Chris Jericho, no matter what you want to say about him, and I know people are a little bit fatigued from him, he's very smart. And he has been. He survived this long in the business, made a ton of money for different promotions, put himself in great positions, interesting stuff. And I think when he's done, people look back and be like, yeah, maybe we're a little bit harsh on him because of those last few years when it just felt, when he was this perception, this narrative that he's kind of sucking away the life from younger talent, kind of aligning with them and so on. And he said all he wants to do is put people over and put younger talent over. There's this narrative, there's this feeling now that he doesn't want to do it. It reminds me a lot of Cody Rhodes at the end in terms of this thing of like, this doesn't feel right, and I just kind of wonder what's going to happen. But, you know, I think I appreciate what Jericho has done in his long career. But when he was not part of All In Texas, that was a big red flag for me in terms of him coming back. AEW's biggest show of the year, and he's not there. Not in an appearance, not in a run-in, not in anything. Guantanamo Bay, the term, I don't know who came up with it, is a real thing. Britt Baker, currently there. Private Party, we assume, is currently there. A lot of our talents are just waiting to be used. Tony says it's the bench. You know, he's focusing on a certain amount of people, and then sometimes he'll pull people off the bench. He equated it to, sports where not everyone can start. That was an unusual analogy, considering, but regardless, I think we kind of understood that. But Chris Jericho is not a bench player for AEW. I don't think he would see himself as a bench player. You know, he's in his early 50s. He can still go, but I think there is this, he just does not fit in this version of AEW like he did at the beginning. Of course, at the end, he was aligned with, he's doing the learning tree with, you know, really kind of leaning into the heel and kind of some of the perceptions of him and so on. And he was aligned with Big Apple and Brian Keith, and he hasn't been around for a long time. He was taking some time off, and when you're not all in some form, for even just an appearance, that would lead me to believe that he's not coming back. Because what at this point, how does he fit? Is my standing desk almost collapses? That was good. How does he fit in today's AEW? Where they don't have a lot of room for some of the talent that they do have. I mean, I talked about Eddie Kingston earlier. Eddie Kingston feels like an AEW lifer. He feels like he belongs. He feels like he's part of it. And it's going to be a huge reaction when he comes back. Chris Jericho, big part of it, but there's something there where I just don't think it's going to happen. And then what happens? Does he go to WWE? How would he fit into today's WWE? I think that they would align with him in some form or fashion. Be a way to, again, public perception. We take another one away, but I don't think he's going to have a regular schedule at this point in his career. But WWE take him? I would think that they would. Put him in NXT, right? Have him work all the young guys. But that is, I think he's done with AEW. There's been no mentions, no allusions to him. Now, I could be wrong, but that, he's got, 5 months ago in a deal, and Tony Khan has shown this propensity to really not have people on TV if there may not be re-signing, or there may be a chance they may not be coming back, to the extreme. I mean, look at Ricky Starks, Miro, that whole situation is different, right? But some of these talents, they just go, they disappear to the bay. And I think Chris Jericho is there. I think he and Tony have probably come to, this is just opining, they've come to some sort of agreement, and Chris Jericho is not coming back to AEW. But we'll see how that plays out. We're going to talk about a contemporary of Chris Jericho, John Cena, and this disaster of a heel run. We'll talk about that after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, come right back. Wrestling Observer Live for Sunday, August 10th, hour two. We're winding down, you and me, solo, on this special two-hour episode of the show. And if you're just missing us late, you can catch the archives at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also listen on Spotify. You can also listen on Apple Podcasts. The show is completely free. Again, WrestlingObserver.com, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. You can search for Wrestling Observer. If you happen to be listening to this in the car or so on and so forth. I don't know how often Sports Byline does replays, but however, you can always listen to the show at our archives. But great thanks to the people at Sports Byline for making this happen, giving a clearance for this to make it happen. It's been a clearance. We get clearance sale on John Cena's heel turn. What a bad analogy that was. I had to try to do something though, right? So John Cena's heel turn officially done. This happened at, we've not talked about this because I was not on the air. Happened just over a week ago on SmackDown, we thought, and then it officially happened at Sunday of SummerSlam, led to the Brock Lesnar return. And I just got to get some thoughts out on this, and thoughts that you're probably thinking, and some thoughts that I might be thinking as well. This thing was a disaster from the start, and we should have known it. We absolutely should have known it. John Cena is too big of a star. Too big of a outside the wrestling, but inside the wrestling bubble, huge star. All-timer. Outside the wrestling bubble, still a big star. People recognize him, know him, and so on. Is he ever going to be at the Dwayne Johnson level? No, I'm going to guess not. But he could be, but I don't know. Just there's some, not everyone could be that the top, but it's very possible he could be. Type Peacemaker, the second season coming up, I believe it's this month or maybe the first week. Yeah, it's this month. That first season was really funny. If you have not watched that, it's on Max, and the second season is going to be on Max. I think the first season is also airing on, might be free TV, but you want to get the uncensored stuff. It's really good, really funny stuff. And he's just, we should have known it because he didn't have the full commitment to the bit. I know Paul Heyman said this week, we'll get to a clip from him in a minute. You know, he was talking about the heel turn, and he hates the what ifs. And what if is what if he was a heel? Well, I guess you can say that here, but not really. And part of the reason is that he just never seemed fully committed to doing it. From the look, but he didn't change the appearance. I know he changed a little bit of his the ring entrance and the expressions, but he still came out with the merch. And the problem is it conflicted, one of the many problems, it conflicted with his retirement tour, which WB is going to try to sell the you-know-what out of, with merch and tickets and all this stuff. But the merch especially, people don't, I guess if it was really cool, people would buy the merch, really cool heel. But it was just John Cena with a sour look on his face and really, really, really long, drawn-out diatribes, and which felt like they rehearsed for days. Did not feel natural at all. And blaming fans and so on and so forth. That's what started. But even as it went on, the punk, his version of the pipe punk, the punk pipe bomb promo, his version of that he did on SmackDown at their Night Champions match. It felt like it was like ChatGPT. And his delivery was just bleh, I was looking forward to it, and I'm just like, okay, are they really going to go for it? And they didn't. Part of going for it is you look at the visuals, you look at you got to change it up, and they did not do that. It was a disaster from the start. And then, really one of the big things I think hurt it, and this is, I think, one of the biggest stories this year, is this absolute disaster with The Rock, Cena, Travis Scott, and who was involved and who got out and what. And then The Rock, obviously, after he was not WrestleMania, said it was his choice for the final boss not to be there. And he gave the whole song and dance, and boy, it was convincing as my 8-year-old tell me that they didn't make a mess in their playroom. Well, who else did that? I don't know. Almost as convincing. Very similar to an 8-year-old. Bad stuff. And then you remember Travis Scott, who was so awkwardly in the ring. They had this huge moment. And this is one of the things that, the TKO era, they love celebrities. They always have in WWE. And Grant, AEW would have done the same thing. But he had this huge moment. And Travis Scott, the rapper, is in the ring in Elimination Chamber. And of course, then he busts Cody's eardrum. And he's in there just like, what is this guy doing in here? And so Paul Heyman was asked this week about Brock Lesnar in the same interview with Ariel Helwani, but also Ariel asked about, and I know he gets maligned for a lot of things, asked about Travis Scott and asked about the falling, was there a falling out and so on and so forth. And let's get into what he said. Let's kick it to Paul Heyman right now.
About the Rock component and the Travis Scott component, it didn't seem like there was a payoff to all of that.
There was. It fell apart, and we moved forward without it.
What fell apart?
The whole deal with Travis Scott.
Is it true that he's pissed people off and he's done? Is that true?
I don't know if he's done. Any meeting that I was in that involved Travis Scott, I got along with him fine. Have I heard things? I have. Do I know the accuracy of it? Haven't heard Travis's version of it. Like his music, like his taste in women that he has children with. Wish I was dating one of those sisters. I'm not. He was married to one. He's doing better in his personal life than I am.
What about The Rock?
What about The Rock?
He didn't show up at WrestleMania.
Well, he was never advertised or booked for WrestleMania.
No, I know, but it seemed like there was going to be some sort of, that he's there, the throat, the three of them.
I don't know. I don't know what happened with Dwayne. That's something you should have Dwayne come into these beautiful Yahoo studios.
It would be great.
And answer for himself. I really don't know.
Okay.
Or have Brian Gewirtz come in, and I'm sure he can tell you their side of the story. I really don't know. I mean, especially at WrestleMania, I had enough on my plate.
Sure, sure.
I wasn't really that concerned with what was going to happen with John Cena and Cody Rhodes' storyline. I was more concerned with the fact that we got a lot to pull off here with the Tribal Chief Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins and CM Punk and where we're going to go with Seth Rollins and how we're going to do this and how we're going to get to next year's Mania and this year's SummerSlam and the trajectory that we had. There was a lot on my plate and also other people that I was working with.
Things fall apart. The Roots song, I believe. Things do fall apart. And that's what happened. And again, he's asking, you know, told deal Travis Scott fell apart. He's heard things, hadn't heard Travis versions of it. And Travis Scott, his song is used as theme for Raw. I believe that's still the case. There was a story out there. He was going to get involved in the action somehow in the ring. It was one rumor, at one point, going to make his debut at Money in the Bank alongside John Cena against Cody Rhodes or perhaps Bad Bunny. That could have been a case. And it seems that things kind of shifted with the, or it could have been, you know, it could have been SummerSlam. And I know Brian Alvarez said that he had heard at some point that, you know, maybe Jelly Roll was the one that they wanted. Now they're like, after the Travis Scott thing fell apart, like, well, we got to do something. And perhaps they've been talking to Jelly Roll for a while. I'm really not sure when that stopped. But these, you know, two partners, they had worked on collaboration on merchandise for WrestleMania 41. And Travis Scott wasn't there. My guess is what fell apart was that Travis Scott wasn't willing to do what Jelly Roll did, which is essentially move and train every single day. And now you have they've set the tone. They've set the bar. Bad Bunny and Jelly Roll and some of these guys, you may not like it. Celebrities have always been part of wrestling, but at least they're putting in the work because now they know that they have to. I think really, in a lot of ways, Pat McAfee was a big proponent of this when, you know, he was doing this thing in NXT, and obviously he's done a couple matches in WWE. Where he put in the work, it's like you can't just go in there and just not do anything and look terrible. And it's probably the reason I'm sure they've had to turn out a lot of celebrities because they're not willing to put in the work. They just want to show up or do a couple days of training and that's it. And I don't think Travis Scott wanted to do that. But you don't ever hear about this stuff. So that whole thing, I mean, this huge turn in Elimination Chamber, the picture of Cena, I swear every day on social, I see that same picture of him with the evil look in his face looking at Rock. And Rock claiming, oh, I had to, I took myself out of it. That's not true. There's something he didn't like about it. And there was something that doesn't make any sense in the world. The guy talks about storytelling. He's a hardcore pro wrestling fan. He is a pro wrestler by heart. He says he loves his business and so on and so forth. All the flowers. Do you believe it? I don't. And nobody does. I mean, look at the WrestleMania doc that they did. They promised they were going to tell the whole story about how the whole Cody thing, Cody and versus the Rock versus Reigns match, and how the thing Cody and the fans and that whole story, how they told that, and that clearly wasn't legit and true because it wasn't best for the narrative. They wanted the narrative that this was planned or whatever, but the real story would have made them look bad. And they don't want that. This whole Rock on the TKO board and so on, there's this dropping in, dropping out. You talk about Cody turning heel and all this stuff. I just wonder. It's one of those things I think. I just wonder about that long term, whether that's a good thing or bad thing. I'm suspect situations like this. Then this John Cena heel turn took another turn. Let's head back to SmackDown this past Friday and a talk he had with R-Truth.
If you back, I'm back. We back. Hi, y'all. Get in here. Oh, we back, Jay. We back, dog. Oh, we back in the saddle.
Man, I was really worried about you. You started acting really weird for like 5 months. You know, you changed your hair. You were really mean to people. Were beating people up. Remember you made that kid in Brussels cry? And then you said you wanted to ruin wrestling. I mean, come on. Did you really think that would work? But it's good to have you back.
Smiles on faces, right? That's what we do in WWE, smiles on faces. I get it for Cena doing that, but boy, you remember it was not that long ago. It was a month ago. R-Truth felt like the hottest thing in wrestling. He got cut, and there was a big public outcry, and he came back. I think it was on that Saturday night's main event, right? Or 2 months ago. Boy, so much stuff happened, but it wasn't that long ago. He came back and felt like the biggest thing in the game. And he changed his name, he cut his hair, and do all that stuff. And where are we at on August 10th? He is right back to the comedy thing before. I'm sure he's making some money, which is good for him. But really, we just retconned that so quickly and didn't pay it off. And same thing with the actual Cena explanation. It was just a quick kind of like, he kind of alluded to The Rock and all that stuff. But man, for a company that has their moments and does all this stuff, there's bigger, better ways to do this, and they're not hitting it. And I think it also do with The Rock. It is crazy. It is absolutely crazy. But this Cena thing has been a kind of a black eye for WWE when it comes to just how it turned out, The Rock's influence, all that as well. Disaster from the start, and something I think we'll look back on and be like, we did not need that. What we do need is one more segment of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nace. We'll close out the show. We'll preview the week ahead. We'll close out 2 hours next, Wrestling Observer Live. Wrestling Observer Live, back with you, Josh Nace, and final segment. We did it, folks. We did 2 hours. I knew it. Oh, I always wanted to do this, and we got it. 2 hours. I think we might try to do next week 2 hours as well. What do I get going? I think my day is completely free. I think we might try to go 2 hours next week too. We'll see what we can do. How about that? Can't promise this forever, but we'll have it for right now, won't we? So let's look ahead at the week. Of course, let's see. We have Raw on Monday. We have, let's see, NXT on Tuesday. It's weird because there wasn't like really any big shows this weekend, which is refreshing. Of course, we have the G1 wrapping up by the end of, by the time we talk on Sunday, I believe. That'll be done. So we have Raw on Monday, NXT on Tuesday. We have AEW Dynamite on Wednesday. The build of Forbidden Door continues. We'll see if we get some more matches or if there's going to be announced on social. And of course, Ring of Honor, Impact on Thursday, TNA Impact. Because, of course, this week, Emergence coming up on Friday. We'll get more matches for that. So a streaming special on their service. And I believe it's Trick Williams and Moose in the main event there. And some other matches, too. We also have SmackDown on Friday, and then we have AEW Collision on Saturday. That'll be taped, and we're, of course, in the G1. So, yeah, AEW is in, doing two shows this week in Cincinnati, taping on Wednesday and Thursday, but Thursday is going to air on Saturday, unless they change it for some strange reason, which I assume they will not. So, yeah, another busy week ahead. Of course, the New Japan, the G1, we'll have all our live coverage all week long, so that'll be a lot of fun. Wrap that up, and then goes right into Forbidden Door Week the week after. And yeah, another busy week, and it's been a busy show. I wanted to do this, and I'm giving it to you today, and I hope you enjoyed it. Please let me know, Josh Nason on Twitter, or Blue Sky, or Josh at F4W Online, or Josh at WrestlingObserver.com, and all the good stuff as well. We'll be back with you right here next week, probably 2 hours. We'll see. This has been fun. I hope you had fun. My name is Josh Nason. This has been yet another edition of Wrestling Observer Live. Have a great week, everyone. Talk to you next week.